Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today, our return visit from Anthony Curtis and Frank B. On last week's show, we did it. It was great. And as soon as over, we go, we have so much more to tell. And we go, well, we have time to tape another show. So if you had not listened to last week's show, do it first. It will put this week's show into context. The whole thing deals with Mattress Mack, who is a Houston businessman who made an offer saying, if you anything you buy in October for more than $3,000, if the Houston Astros win the World Series, you get your all your money back.
It wasn't just October, right? It was
No, it was, he ran the thing through most of the year, I believe.
So it was, he had a lot of money, and it was up to Frank and Anthony to bet the Astros any damn way they could that was legal. So now they're going to tell more of the story than they told last week. First question, you had a lot of money to get down. Like you would have a suitcase of $250 that you had to go and wheel into a casino.
$250,000.
Is that bigger than $250? Yeah.
Some of these bets were seven figures, right? So how did that work? How did you get the cash into the?
Well, okay. So there were two parts to this. You know, the first part was the strategy itself. The second part was the execution. We know enough about it. We've made enough big bets. We've done enough things that we know that the execution of making big bets can be difficult. One, to get to the casinos to accept the wager. Two is to actually go through the process of getting the money down and into their cage. The first thing we learned is that banks don't carry as much money as you think they would.
And they hate it when you withdraw cash.
Yeah. And the first thing we did is Mac wired us a bunch of money to operate with out of Vegas. He then, you know, he basically handled the East Coast when he had to go there, but we handled most of the Vegas work. Once that money was in the bank account, we went and we saw the head of our bank and said, look, here's what's going on. We're going to level with you. This is what we're doing. It's completely on the up and up. You can, you know, we can give you documents and show you. We need access to this money. And the first thing they told me is, we don't have this money. And, you know, and we're talking about just $150,000. You know, they could not give that to us, and we needed much more than that on occasion. So the first thing we had to solve was, how do you get money to where it needs to go? We did that with sometimes with wires, and we did that sometimes, but more often with cashier's checks. But with people, you know, most people think a wire is instantaneous and a cashier's check is negotiable, you know, legal tender, that right away it becomes usable. Not true. For these sorts of things, these transfers had to be verified, and often they could not be verified within the same day without setting up special situations and pulling strings. So it became a very difficult process for us to be able to get money in. And then once we would win a bet, we'd have to carry that money out with cash or leave it on account. And so the whole thing became a very, you know, arduous and complicated part of the game.
Yeah, it took up way more time just going through the motions of getting money from point A to point B. And on Anthony's side, he spent an incredible amount of time away from his normal work and just tending to these things, like you got to talk to this banker, you got to talk to this sportsbook, you got to talk to this casino cage, got to figure out what it is we have to do. Then there's a lot of running around. Literally, this was a full-time job for 5 weeks straight. And, you know, I just put what I normally do aside because I have the luxury to do that. He didn't. He had to try to somehow crowbar what he does every day into whatever available hours there were.
Well, he normally only works a half day from like 4 to 4.
Right. Yeah. So outside of sleeping, eating, and doing the normal daily ablutions, I guess that he found time somehow.
Yes, but it was okay. But again, it was the actual execution of doing it and dealing with large sums of money, and just the eyebrows that go up when you're at the teller's window and telling them you need, two cashier's checks for $300,000 and six cashier's checks for $100,000 because the first time we did this on the fly. The first time we did it, we realized that when we cut a check from Huntington Press, my company, to Frank B or to my even to myself, that's not allowed in Nevada. You cannot, a business cannot send a cashier's check in the name of another person. The receiver and the remitter has to be the same name for it to cash as instantly as possible. So everything had to be changed there. And we learned all these things on the fly. And at certain times, we were dashing between banks and between casino windows trying to get the money okayed in order to make the bet. And then it would have to go from the cashier's cage. It would have to be walked over to the sports book in chips. And then there's a whole different thing there.
They couldn't just say, we have the money on deposit? You have to physically take the chips?
At one point, we were waiting to make a really important bet at the Mirage. And they kept telling me, Frank was with Mac. Mac actually came in for this. They were at the window, and Frank kept texting me 10 minutes, 8 minutes. Till the game starts. And I'm going, what's the hang up here? And they're like, we need a host. I go, I don't want a comp. We don't need a host. What is this all about? They go, that is our internal procedure. A host has to come and verify. And that, I mean, every place was different. So we had to learn all of this protocol from all these different places that we were betting. And we got really good at it. I mean, we knew everything that was going on at each place before we made a wager.
Yeah. Admittedly, the first 2 weeks were the real difficult parts because not only are we going through this learning process, but once you eventually get money into play, now we're dealing with exchanging winning tickets for chips or just cashing out. And it's a lot easier when you can cut the bank out of things. So, but you know, unfortunately, we won some bets early. So we operate, you know, but the first couple of weeks, we would spend entire mornings just going from bank to casino cage. Nope, that's not right. Got to go back and do it again. And that would blow off entire mornings.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So were there bets that you did miss just because you could not physically get the money to the...
A couple times.
Yeah, there were a couple instances we said, you know, this ain't going to be worth the hassle that we're going to have to go through to get this bet in. This is not that critical a bet. The game goes the wrong way then or the right way, depending on how you look at it. We could get a better price tomorrow. So there were a couple times we rolled the dice and said, this is just going to be too difficult to accomplish. Mm. Just let's see what happens today.
And some of the bigger bets on the East Coast, that required Matt getting on his plane and going. So yep. We would, every morning, we'd get together real early and we'd have a conference call with Matt. And we would make a decision. And sometimes we would write to him in advance going, you're going to have to travel today.
Yeah, the night before.
So he could get ready and go. And Frank said last, you know, on the last show we were on with you is how much energy he had. And that was really impressive. He never once said, I can't do it. I'm out of it. I'm not going to go today. He just did it. He got on his plane. He'd travel. He'd do it. He'd fly back. Amazing.
How old man is he?
He's 68.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
He's not like super old, but he's you know.
Well, I'm 4 years older and do not have near the energy that he seems to have.
Oh, yeah. And he's running the biggest furniture chain in the state of Texas, too, at the same time.
Now, you both have gambler buddies who have lots of cash on hand. Who could you have used their help in getting this down, or was that out of the question? Or
no. We didn't want to bring our friends into it in that capacity. We talked about it a couple of times. And because, you know, anytime anything can go wrong when you're in a transference of that kind of money, when you're moving it, you guys know what it's like when you have team banks and things and something can go wrong. And then somebody's got to be obligated for that. And we really didn't want to bring our friends into it in that capacity. We discussed about bringing them in on man-to-man betting. But we discounted that, as we discussed in the last show. But we really didn't. On a couple of occasions, you know, we used our own money to cover something that, you know, he would then return to us.
Right.
Okay. So let's actually go through the playoffs and how it worked and how your opinion changed. Now, the Astros had a first round bye. In the second round, they're playing the Rays and the Yankees are playing the Twins. Did you care who won between the Yankees and the Twins?
Yes. You want the most formidable opponents to be in the field for this as it moves along, you want them to go as deep as possible because, you know, in the end, what do we want?
You're looking for an insurance
better
price.
Prices on better the prices, Astros.
And we want the Astros to lose most likely. You know, I mean, this is he and I speaking, it's not Mac. But so when it comes to teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers in particular, yes, we wanted them to go as far as possible because it results in the better to win World Series odds on the Astros, plus also more competition for them as they have to go through the field.
Yeah, this was what the big hill we had to climb was that we were laying prices so often. That's why we had to take a lot of future stuff where we were getting plus money, especially in the beginning, because it eats you up if something goes wrong. You know, if you're laying these big prices, you just can't get enough down to get to the point you need to get to. So we always wanted everything that would lower the perception of the Astros being this juggernaut that they pretty much were, even though they didn't pull it off. That was our biggest fear, is that the Astros were going to steamroll their way right through, you know, the entire playoffs, and we were never going to get any prices.
Well, that certainly didn't happen.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when I'm sure that's the direction you're going. But we both, I called Frank when the Tampa Bay was playing the Athletics, and I said, do we care? And he's like, yeah. And I said, I care. And I said, who do you want? He goes, Athletics. I go, yeah, me too, because Athletics just had a higher profile. So right off the bat, boom, something went wrong and Tampa Bay won, you know.
And Tampa Bay provided worthy opposition to the Astros. So during that series, how did the betting go?
Yeah, but not without a lot of anxiety, because the Astros won the first two games. And, you know, our biggest fear, or the worst possible outcome, is that the Astros just steamroll through everybody. And because of the way that we decided to go with this, which is the slow and measured rollout of the hedge versus the shove early thing, we anticipated that there would be opportunities along the way that the Astros would stumble, and that would give us a shot to get in money good on whatever the situation was due to them faltering a little bit. And when they came out 2-0, there was a point, and it was the only point, that I was sitting there one day, and I think we sort of shared the sentiment. We were like, man, could it possibly be that they roll through like this and we never get a good shot to get this money, and he comes up really short? But, you know, things turned. They won the next two games, and that was fantastic, because in game five, we had our first opportunity for him to realize a really big windfall, because we weren't even halfway in with the bankroll yet, and they had like a 32%, 30%, whatever it was, chance of actually knocking the Astros out. And had that happened, you know, that would have made everything worth it.
All right, so the Houston beats the Rays, and the Yankees beat the
one thing we didn't finish on in this discussion just now,
yes,
is that we had to sell, probably the hardest thing we had to sell to Mac, although it wasn't that hard. I'll tell you, Mac was a great customer, whatever you want to call him, client, you know, partner. And we had to sell him on the opportunity value of waiting. And we looked at it. We talked about it hard, and we talked with Steve Heston in Maryland about opportunity value and what could happen in three series, right? A five-game series, a seven-game series against probably the Yankees, and a seven-game series against, you know, whoever's going to come out of the National League. And he said there had to be opportunities. They weren't going to lead. They could steamroll. As Frank said, that was our biggest fear, but they probably wouldn't, and that's where the opportunities would be. So when the Yankees won those first two games, we're like, oh boy, you know, are we going to get any opportunity in this? Then that great comeback by the Tampa Bay team, and that game five was huge. And that's when Mac really got aboard and started using that same term of opportunity value, you know, going forward from there.
Okay. So when it's Yankees Astros, you get some more value because the Yankees win the first two games in Houston, didn't they?
I think they. I know they. Well, they won Game One, but I think they. Yeah, was think it they was lo- a Korea lo- game? Wasn't that the right game? Korea. Hit
yeah,
a home run?
They lost the second because we were. Yeah, we were excited. That would have given us. If the Yankees would have taken that, we would have been just in a powerhouse position. I'm pretty sure they lost Game Two.
Yeah, I think that was the Korea hitting that late home run.
Yeah, that's right. Was it in extra innings?
Yeah. I think it was the 10th.
Yeah. And but it was still good. That's what we were saying. We need the Yankees to win one in Houston, and they did. And prices dropped, and we were able to get some good good hedge money down on the Astros at that point to go all the way and win the World Series. Yeah.
See, I actually happened to see Anthony on the night of the second game between the Astros and the Yankees, and he's saying, "Yeah, we really need the, you know, if the Yankees win, then our job is pretty much over." And so I'm just going, I didn't understand any of that at that point as to what the whole name of the game was. Did not realize that the on GetTheGamblingWithAnEdge.com, Anthony was publishing a basically almost a daily blog as to how this whole procedure was going. If you have not seen that blog, there is information there that we're not covering today, but it's quite interesting.
Yeah, and that blog's going to get, you know, it's at LasVegasAdvisor.com, and it's easy to find. It's always focal on the front page. It's called Mattress Mac and the Astros Hedge, and we are going to really get into a lot more. You know, there are things that we just don't have time to talk about on something like this, but we have time to write about it, and we'll be putting them up. And by the time that this show airs, the whole thing will probably be complete. Anybody who really wants to read the story, along with a lot of photos, interesting things of things that happened along the way. Mac eating steak at Ellis Island, $100,000 cashier's check blowing out of my pocket that Frank saw. He goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "What?" We're walking, and I had a suit jacket on, and this $100,000 cashier's check is dangling by some thread. It's held out there. I didn't even know. And he grabs me and pushes me back and pushes it back into my pocket.
I said, is that a check? Because we're walking into the Golden Gate and the wind's blowing and I see this thing. I go, "Is that a check?" And he goes, "Yeah." I go, "I hope it's the first one coming out, not that," because he had like half a dozen in his pocket.
Yeah, yeah. That wasn't the last one that was just laying there. And I mean, this is kind of like, unfortunately, it's kind of like a homeless area there. And there could have been, talk about making it rain. I mean, it could have really been coming down in some places there. But I mean, we've also got another photo of the first time we picked up cash. I'm going backwards a little bit here. I'm sorry in the interview.
It's okay.
But the first time we picked up cash, we didn't realize that our bag wasn't big enough, right? So we stuffed as much as we could into
gambling
the bag.
Gambling problems.
Yeah. And I mean, that was embarrassing. We should have known better, right? But we're looking at each other. What are we going
to
do?
Wait, so how
you
much
go
were
to the
you
store and
up?
Come back with Papa got a brand new bag.
Was it half a million?
We had chips, but then we had a half a million in cash. And they go, I go, "You got a bag for that?" And they go, "Yeah." And they put it in a bag. It was a clear bag. You can see, yeah, it's a clear plastic bag. I go, "Okay, that's not exactly what I meant, but okay, we got to figure this out." So, yeah, I mean, we look kind of stupid.
He had a computer case. We thought he had like a computer case, and we tried to fit it in there, and we couldn't.
It wasn't even close.
And there were about maybe, I don't know, 150,000 sitting on the thing. And he's like, "What are we going to do?" And I'm like, "What can we do?" And I just gathered it up. I put it under my arm, and we walked right out of the place, man. I mean, just with our heads on a swivel looking, because it was in clear view that we're carrying, you know, just bricks and bricks.
The dealers are looking at us like, "What is with you guys?" Yeah.
So we got a picture of that outside. We took
so
a quick
So you can't
quick
put shot. It under your shirt and look obscenely pregnant or like you're clearly hiding something, but it's better to
Were you headed toward a car, I
yeah.
assume?
And well, our car was in valet. So it's like, let's just get out to the street, right? And I thought about it. I thought about putting it under, but there was so much of it. And now you can't really control it. Maybe it falls out, you know, whatever. You got to make all these split decisions, right? And I said the easiest way, because it was still in that clear bag, so I could keep it all in the bag. And I just put it under my arm. I go, "Let's go." And he got behind me. And we just walked right out to the thing. And then he took it from me and got behind a trash can. And while we were waiting for the valet thing, we didn't want the valet to see it. I went and took a photo of it. So we got a picture of it up in the blog and, you know, stuff like that.
So did you steal the trash bag out of the trash can? At least that was opaque.
Nah, I just was looking for shelter, little something to hide behind.
Wow.
One more thing. I'll tell you what. One more
sure.
thing. We stuck that money. So I had in chips and cash, I think we had $700,000, and it's in my car, and he's going to meet me at our meeting place or back at the office where we're going to stash it somewhere, you know, wherever we're going to take it. And as I'm driving, things start to go through your head because you've talked to Bob Nersession so many times about the police stopping you for something. and finding money and taking it, right? I mean, you know, possessing it, you know, and then you've got to go through all these things. So I'm thinking, all of a sudden I see a yellow light and I'm like, stop, you know, don't go through a yellow light. Don't do anything. Don't take any chances. Don't get in an accident. Don't do anything wrong that would have somebody going through here and saying, what's this money?
Yeah.
How do you explain it? You can explain it, but are they going to believe you or not? So there's all these ancillary things that come up in the execution. It's crazy.
But there's so much problem with a bank. But if you just left the money on deposit at the casino, then you should be able to just withdraw it immediately, right? Not have the hassle of a bank. Why not just leave it on deposit?
Well, that's what eventually happened. But we had to get it out initially. That was the first couple of weeks because we continually needed to be refunded because we're betting more and we're betting more.
And in different places.
Yeah, and most of these early tickets were on them to win the World Series. So there's not tickets that are going to clear. If we want to bet more, we need more money. So we did eventually get to the point where the bank wasn't an issue anymore because we were more liquid. We had chips, tickets to cash, money on deposit, things like that. But yeah, you're right.
It took a long time to seed those accounts. Yeah. And you know, we were doing most of our betting at Circa because Circa was willing to take the money. But it's not fair to use the casino as a bank. You know what I mean? It's not fair to be in and out saying, okay, give us all this money back so we can go bet it across the street. That was a tough thing to do. They never gave us a hard time about it. That's why we're so indebted to them for this. But we just, there was a right and wrong of, you know, what we should do on this. And it was very difficult in the beginning to do that. Now, to take it a step farther, and thank goodness we thought about this, but we were coming into our first weekend where we had to make big bets. And it was going to be a huge pivotal game on a Sunday. How do we get funds? How do we get funds if we need them from the bank? Mac had just wired in more money. How do we get this? What do we do with it? Twice we had to think going into a weekend that we had to have all of our money liquid in chips. We had to take them out of the cage so we could go to different places. I mean, there are a million things to think of here.
Would some of the sports book take chips from other casinos?
No. Just the Golden Gate and D would swap them back and forth really, really well. You know, I know we said it before, but both those places, Circa, they were so good through all this thing. I mean, even when it came to spots that, you know, we would discuss and we go, do we really want to do this? I mean, considering how good they're being, like there'd be a game and we knew exactly, they let us know up front exactly how much they would take on the game. So we knew we could count on them for a certain amount. But if they had 5 cents worse than the down the street, I'm like, we can't in good conscience do this. We need to cash this ticket and take the money down the street and bet it, or in some cases, just withdraw from the cage. And they were like, it's cool, man. We understand. You know, 5% of a bunch is a bunch, you know? So
they wouldn't price match in that situation.
They did.
That's one thing we learned on this, is it was very difficult. The only time we were able to have books, you know, negotiate a price with us was in the very beginning. When it got moving, they wouldn't move for us. We would say, you know, look, we got 134 down the street and you guys are 138. Will you give us 134? They're like, no. And they go, this is what our number. And it came to the point where sometimes we actually would, as almost a convenience fee, we would take a couple cents worse at a place like Circa because our money, A, was on deposit there. B, we felt, you know, we owe them something. We did some concessions there, and we wanted to keep them happy. We wanted to make sure that, you know, we were giving them enough action, square action, that they wanted in response to what they were doing for us. So, you know, it was almost like a fee you would pay for, you know, for the ability and access
to bet at that level, for the ability to bet at that level. Now, other jurisdictions, because that was Matt going there and he had relationship with them, they didn't screw around. If they told him, you can have this bet when he was in Houston, he goes, all right, I'm getting on the plane. But it wouldn't change when he got there. So they would hold the price for him. You know, there was one outfit in New Jersey that he would call when he got there. And as soon as they realized he wanted a bet, they'd start raising the price. That was the place I referred to previously where I said I really wanted to win bets against those guys because they tried to screw him at every turn. And he realized after a while, I go, Mac, they're screwing you.
But
you
understand,
every time you tell them what you want, I watch it go 2 minutes later, it raises 10 cents.
Yeah,
I go,
but it wasn't DraftKings or FanDuel.
No.
It was another one trying to get into the market. So.
And why would you not want to out them?
It was Unibet. I don't mind it. I mean, they did it. So, you know, I don't mind saying it. Now, on the other hand, Unibet took big bets. So, you know, it's like, okay, on one hand, we were like, you know, we don't like these guys. On the other hand, we're like, okay, yeah, we need you. And you were at least willing to take big bets. You know what? They raised the price on us. It's a take it or leave it for us.
Right.
Right. Right. We don't, right. You know, and that would be, if I were their guy, you know, if I were on here to defend my thing, I would go, okay, maybe we did that. Maybe that's gamesmanship and maybe that made sense for us, but we didn't force you to take that bet. Why right. did you take it? Because at our price, it was still good for you to do. So I defend them in that way. But yeah, they pissed us off a couple of times with their moves. Just go ahead and ask, Richard. Anything you want to know, you just go ahead and ask me.
It used to really bug me when guys, you know, when casinos would do something really horrible and then the people wouldn't want to reveal who it was for some weird reason. You know what I mean?
Right, implied like value down the road, I guess.
Yeah. When people are, you know, scum. Well, I don't want to call them scumbags, but
yeah, they weren't scumbags. They were pulling a play. They were making a move. They were making
shooting.
A move on him. And look, one of the things we were brought into this to do was to, you know, prevent that from happening. So when we would see it happening, we'd call bullshit on them, and you know, most of the time they'd go, you know, take it or leave it. And I see that point. I see that point of view. It's too high, then don't take this bet. And you know, right. more often we took it than not because they were taking big money. And we needed a result. We needed to get action.
And that was the one, probably the one bet along the way that I had the biggest problem with was that very first time they did that, and then the bet was made. And I said, listen, guys, we cannot do this. We cannot let them set that precedent that they can do that to us every time. That every time we call for a bet, they go, oh yeah, sure, you can have it, and then they raise it by 8%, that whatever it amounts to. You can't let them get away with that. So if this happens with somebody else, you got to say no. You got to be able to say no. Otherwise, they're going to keep doing it down the road, and this is going to add up to a lot of money that you're getting gouged for, because that's what it is.
And we did say no a couple of times.
Yeah.
I mean, a couple of times it did happen where they raised the price on us. We knew they raised the price on us after we'd already talked to them, and when we got there, it was different, and we didn't take it. It happened a couple of times. And we did it again to set a precedent that we're not going to let you guys just yank us around all day long.
I was at the gym this morning, and I have a gym buddy, and we were talking about Mattress Mac. So my friend said, wouldn't it have made sense for Mac to let his customers take insurance, such as if you want a third of your money now, some number.
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
Buyout option.
Buyout.
They do the
buyout option. There are a lot of his customers who are not gamblers, who would definitely want a bird in the hand over two in the bush. And I was just wondering, would that have been a good marketing ploy for him? It would be money in the bank for him, or?
Well, all right, let me address that, because we had a lot of ideas along the way that sound very solid until you really look at the realities of being able to do that. So one of the things that was so eye-opening for us on this, and we should have known it, but how the speed at which the games would come next and next and next, it was happening so fast. And while that is a really interesting idea on the surface, I don't think that he would have had time to execute that, you know, to contact everybody and say, okay, here's your option, and then process it. You know what I mean? I just don't think it could have happened all that way, although it's an idea parallel to what we're doing right here, and that does make sense. I just don't think it would have been able to have been pulled off.
Unless he did it before the World Series started or before the playoff started.
Even that, it's amazing how fast things happen. Again, it's amazing how long things take to develop, but how fast the action keeps coming game after game, and they move to the next, and they move to the next. I think a lot of times my head was swimming with, holy mackerel. You know, I mean, like on a traveling day, holy mackerel. All right, so like on a traveling day, we go, wow, we get a day off.
Nope.
No. I mean, we had to be, because boom, it was on us again the next day. And one day, we didn't even know that the game was being played at 1 and not at 5. And
they did a little time change, I believe.
Yeah, and did that throw us into a tizzy about how to handle that? So it's just all these things. You got a lot of wise guys out there, and nothing against your friend because it's a good idea. But you got a lot of people out there going, well, obviously they could have done this. Well, no. Right. I guarantee you we could not have done that.
Yeah, and all the way down the line, all the way to the guys who are saying, well, you should have bet nothing. It's like, you don't understand. Okay. You're obviously not grasping this. It's, he can't do nothing. It's like the alternative is, you know, like death to your business. You know, it's like you have insurance. You're going to get cancer 30% of the time. Do you want to buy insurance that will, you won't die? You know? So yes, you want to do that. So like passing on all these supposed, and yes, they really are negative EV bets. That's not an option. There is a minimum amount of coverage that was required. And that had to be met regardless of the cost. And our job was to do it as efficiently and economically as possible.
At the best,
that was the reason.
Price that, you could get.
Right. That was the whole point of the thing. So all these guys that come from every direction saying, "These are, that's a stupid bet. You're not grasping it."
Right. I mean, even in the furniture business, you have to bet Kelly. Right.
Yes. And so exactly.
And if his risk of ruin is 30%, then right. Yeah, you got to.
He had in situations like this, you have to avoid catastrophe. That's right. What it's all about. And this probably would have been catastrophic for him, you know, to have to give all of that money back. And I tell people, look, raise the stakes. Let's say, and you're sitting here smugly going, he had all the best of it. He should have done nothing. But at a cost of what is it going to cost him? So raise the stakes and say it is offered to you and say, if the Astros go all the way and win, you're going to die.
You lose your entire net worth.
Yeah, but that, take it farther. You lose your life. You will die.
Do you want insurance?
You want to take a chance? Yeah. Or are you going to insure that? You're going to insure that doesn't happen to you. And look what happened. It went to the last. How would you like to have your life on the line going to game 7 against the Nationals?
Down 2-1 in the 7th.
Yeah. How would you like that? So, you know, all these people who smugly sit there and say, he's dumb for doing anything, they're out of their minds.
Yeah.
If knowing what you knew.
Well, I mean, the crazy thing, I guess, would be to make the offer in the first place, right? Well, you're making an offer to the public that can kill you if you don't get insurance.
Well, he got lots of advertising out of that, lots of good work.
Well, actually, you can address that, right, about the advertising?
Yeah, that's another point. Well, let me go back a little bit, you know, when you're talking about it. Because when we started, I told you things changed a little bit. And they changed, or I told you last segment that we did, that they changed a little bit in the middle. And part of it was because he continued to sell furniture. And he was selling quite a bit of furniture as the games were going on and people were hearing about this through all the PR. And at one point I said to him, why are you doing that? Like, why do you keep selling furniture?
Under the promotion.
Yeah. And he said, I'm a salesman. That's what I do. Right? And it made me think of, you know, the story of the scorpion and the frog, right?
Right.
When they're going across the river and the scorpion kills the frog, he goes, now we're both going to die. Why did you do that? He goes, because I'm a scorpion, mother. You know what I mean? And it's just that sort of thing. And a lot of people go, well, then he's greedy. Well, maybe, but he's also a guy who has established, I mean, who has made himself a fortune, you know, a fortune by doing things like this. And he's not going to change his spots. And this is how he operates. He's also done a lot of really good things with his money, you know, in hurricane relief and all this kind of stuff. He's been very, very good there. So that never bothered me. Like, oh, you know, poor guy. Well, yeah, poor guy. If he's going to lose everything on one shot, you know, we're going to help him here. But, okay, so the PR part of it. Absolutely. You know, in the beginning, I kind of was of the opinion PR is not that important. He's got a lot of PR. He's going to get PR. People know what he does. But the level of PR that came out of this, that was absolutely started going into the formula where we started thinking about it going, ooh, you know, we've got him hedged X, Y, and Z, but better throw this in too. There was a lot of public relations value in this for him.
And the interesting thing of it is that it was a byproduct of the chosen strategy. Had he shoved all early and just said, okay, I got a bet, it's covered, and you know, he may have had to scramble to cover more.
Which he would have if he'd bought insurance.
Right. He wouldn't have had that this slow, gradual ramp up of public interest and PR value. And that became like a major part of this. Yeah,
that allowed the press to have another story to write. Oh, right. He just flew into New Jersey and made a, you know, $1 million bet.
A result of the slow rollout of the hedge rather than shoving it all in early.
And I'll take it a step farther when it comes to PR. What about gambling and sports betting in general? I've actually got a call the other day from the Houston Chronicle, you know, where he comes. Now, we've talked to ESPN, Houston Chronicle, LA Times, you know, you know, it's not as big as the shooting, you know? I mean, I never talked to so much press in my life after the shooting at Mandalay Bay, but there was a lot of press attached to this thing, a lot of people coming from different areas. And the last one I had, a guy said, I don't really want to talk about all this bombastic numbers and everything else. He goes, what does this say about gambling? What does this say about sports betting? What does this say about the possibility for these markets to be used in legitimate financial matters? And I was like, yeah, baby, that's what we've been waiting for, somebody to recognize that. And what can actually be done? You know, it's always gambling so bad, gambling destroys lives, blah, blah, blah. No, this is a market. And this is, if you're smart, you can make money at gambling. I'm looking at people across from me right now sitting in this studio who have done that. And a lot of other people can too through these kinds of methods. And I really like the direction that this is going. I mean, you know, where's Forbes? You know, let's do a story.
Yeah. Yeah.
They did do one. You just missed it. It's in there. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Good. Well, no, but I don't think they've done a story about how gambling can become right. part of a legitimate business strategy.
Yeah, well, we mentioned bringing in Steve Heston. I mean, before Steve was a professor of finance at Maryland, Steve worked on the arbitrage desk of a giant Wall Street firm. In fact, I think he was the head of the desk.
Yeah, he ran the arbitrage desk at Goldman Sachs.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're not talking about stupid alley craft games here. You know, we're talking about legitimate business strategies. We're talking about game theory, equilibrium, things that happen in economics and business that just played itself out in front of everybody.
When you started, what was the agreement without going into precise numbers and percentages of how you two were going to be compensated for getting all this money down?
Okay. So before Frank and I came on the show, we said to each other, if we get asked that, who's answering? We flipped a coin and I lost. So
that means you answer?
That means I'm answering.
All right.
To be honest, we don't know what our compensation is going to be for this. There will be some compensation. When I was approached by Mac's attorney, he said, look, we fully expect you guys to charge a fee of some sort. What would you charge? I said, I have no idea. I don't know what this is going to entail, whatever. But I said, we would like to be a participant in this. We would like to be a part of it. We would like our remuneration to be attached to how much we win or how much we save. And they love that idea. So that was an agreement that we made, is that we are going to get a position. I mean, we're going to get compensation based on probably what we saved him over going other routes. Now, the thing was, we had to jump into action right away. So in order for these, they didn't even know how to write up the contract. So I had to write the contract and I outlined the concept of how we would be paid. And it was agreed to, but I can tell you that my outline does not touch what we ended up doing.
Because it just got more complicated.
Yeah, it got more and more complicated. So we don't really know. But we've also, to be honest, we've had, you know, everyone's going to be, oh, yeah, sure. But it's true. We had this conversation. We said, do we really care? Yeah, we care. Of course we care. But we're not going to, that's not what this really was about. This was really about the experience and what we learned and, you know, all the things that we're talking about here. You can tell by our enthusiasm how much we love doing this.
Well, it also sounds like, you actually made a friend in this guy, and it doesn't sound like you're worried at all about getting screwed by him. It sounds like he's the kind of guy who's going to take care of you and you know.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah, he's a fair guy. So, you know, we're not really worried about that, and we don't want to be mercenary. You know, I can tell you one thing. We never made a bet that we said, this will be better for us if it goes this way. We never even thought about it. We only bet according to the way that we thought would bring him out on the best side. And he said, we'll let the rest of it take care of itself. So honestly, the full truth is, everyone's asked me that. How much did you make? Don't know. We don't know at this point.
We should mention we're taping this on November 2nd. So by the time you hear it, they probably will know. But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And you probably still won't get a better answer, though.
Well, you know, a lot of things in this really do, by necessity, have to remain, you know, private.
Sure.
You know, I explained this to one guy. I said, he's not a public company. He's a private enterprise, and he is not obliged to tell you everything and show you his rear end. That's not part of the deal.
When you said earlier that, you know, halfway through the playoffs, he was still making the bet that are still making the advertising, if you buy more than $3,000 worth of things and the Astros win, you get your money back. So that would have, as the Astros got closer and closer, that would have the effect of lowering the price for all of the products that people were buying, unless he was raising the prices simultaneously. Do you have any idea of like a $4,000 for furniture set became $4,800 close to the World Series? Do you have any idea on that?
We don't know anything about it. On the last show we did, I told you that in the middle, a bunch of things came into play that were new. And part of it was, what is the margin on selling furniture? You know what I mean? Like, how much of the obligation, you know, that we're protecting was profit, and how much was, you know, overhead and things like that. It became very complicated. But in terms of the actual businesses and the things he did, we never knew. The closest we ever got to it is Frank said, why aren't we flying there to buy furniture?
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking that. Like, man, the furniture became a great deal at one point there, yeah, if he was still offering that deal.
Here's how little we knew about it after a few weeks. There came a point where we're looking at the spreadsheet every day, and we're updating it and talking. And only then did we learn that he was still selling furniture under the promotion. I go, what? I go, wait a minute. So you can imagine the conversations that took place after that. There was at one point we go, you know, you got to, if they lose tonight, if they win tonight, you got to stop, you know, yeah. Because this is going to get to the point where it's not you can't rehabilitate that position. But you know, he made adjustments along the way, and you know, from that point on, we were aware and cognizant of exactly where everything stood, and you know, going forward, we were able to handle things. But, you know, there was a lot. We weren't interested in it. We were interested in our end of things. And what he was doing over there, we just, okay.
It was amazing how the relationship changed through all of this. You know, it's like he was guarded, so guarded in the beginning, and we didn't have all the facts. And it was like, you know, if you've ever seen Jerry Maguire, you know, where that famous story is going, help me help you. You know, it was like that. You know, we were having these come to Jesus meetings, you know, help me help you, you know, tell me the truth. What do we need to do? And it came around, and it became a really good relationship between, you know, the three of us.
Very good. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, Frank. We're going to take some commercials now. We'll be back to them in a moment. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In November, the promotion deals with Amazon gift cards. Play enough so you can get $25 in cash or free play normally, which is $8,334. Redeem those points and you'll get a $50 cash card. So for those of you who consider an Amazon gift card to be the equivalent of cash, this is double points all month, or 0.6% through your first $88,000. Rather, $83,000 of coin in. Thanksgiving, there's a $30,000 hot seat promotion between 8 a.m. and 11 p.m. Every 3 minutes, $100 is given away to anyone who, with their card in. If you have your card in and have bet at least $1 in the previous minute, you are eligible to be drawn. At predictit.org, this is a market where you can place small bets on the occurrence of various political events. Mostly, but not entirely, in the United States. There are a number of Trump-related bets these days, obviously, and a number of who the Democratic nominees are going to be, or will this or that person be indicted? Will this or that person have to get public testimony? And for those political junkies, this is a lot of fun. The bets you make are small, so gambling-wise, it's not a huge investment. Interest-wise, if you're a political science junkie, it's a lot of fun. Gambling with an Edge listeners receive a one-time offer of a deposit match up to $20 at predictit.org/promo/edge. You must play the money through at least once and cannot withdraw it for 30 days. At videopoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The pro membership, which is for an additional fee, gives you correction on Ultimate X on all of the games up to triple play, five play, and quick quads. This is the only place where you can get that. The game of the week is Stack the Deck. This is a 7 coins per line game. We're on dealt hands of trips, quads, full houses, and four to the royal. you receive from 3 to 5 extra cards of the exact card you need to make your hand. That is, if you're dealt 3-3-3-6-6, and instead of having one extra 3 to make 4 of a kind if you draw to it, you now have 6 threes out of 52 cards, giving you plenty of chances for quads, quints, and quads with a kicker. They have extra pay schedule categories of baby royal, which means 9 through king suited, and 5 of a kind. Since the game is fixed as a 7 coin per line game, sometimes they have to change the pay schedule to make the game within acceptable bounds. That is, for the 9-6-4 double-double bonus game becomes 10-7-5, which requires a considerable number of strategic changes to play appropriately. All right, we're back to Anthony and Frank.
So last week we talked about, you know, getting your drink tickets at the South Point. What about comps for, you know, all this money you're putting down? What were the comps like?
Well, here's the cool thing. You talk about fun. They've got to swipe a card, right? You know, every time you make a bet, they got to swipe a card. So when we made the first bet at South Point, Frank made the bet and they swiped his card. And we took a look and went, wow, we can go to Michael's.
For one bet.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we began to calculate that a little bit. And I didn't have a M Life, you know, high enough status for parking. So when we had to go make the next bet at Mirage, I made the bet. So now I can park free at the MGM, right? And
that's the biggest comp you got out of this, parking free at MGM. It's not a trivial comp.
It's not trivial.
Yeah, I hate to break it to him. I don't think you're getting that for that.
Oh, really?
No, they don't give you crap for betting sports at MGM.
Okay, well then, all right, I'm wrong. But I
especially
knew.
Especially if you're going to Golden Knights game, having a free parking at MGM is a good deal.
Right. Well, I think they'll probably do something for it, but we'll see. We'll find that out. But I mean, I'll give you an example. All the stuff we did at Circa, because it was easier for me to make the bets at Circa because I was already established. I made the first one, so it was easier for me to do it. So I was making all the bets there, and they're swiping my card. And the other day, I went up to the booth, and I said, "Can you check my account? You know, both my table account and my machine account to see what I've got." She goes, "Can I have your ID?" And I didn't have it with me. I said, I didn't bring it. But I said, "Is it a lot?" She goes, "Oh, yeah." And I said, "Is it close to 4 figures? She goes, "It's above 4 figures. She goes, "Yes, it's above 4 figures already." You know, so we're going to have some meals at Andiamo. We're going to go to Michael's. We're going to, that was a really nice perk for us on that.
So did you have a big party when this all was over? Or did you do something to celebrate? Did Matt come in and go to Ellis Island for dinner or what?
No, we really decompressed the following day. And that night we were just, it was like a very big exhale that everything was done. And I think I mentioned that I at that point, I my head was swimming because I wasn't sure that I was happy about the result. I was like, I go, all those people could have got free furniture and you know, Mac would have been much happier if the, you know, from a sports fan perspective, if the Astros had won. But we didn't do much at all, you know. But there were people along the way that you know, never understood the thing. So, like, we after any what appeared to be a big win by the Astros, and you might turn to, you know, the person who you thought through the whole game watching and understood it, and then the Astros win, and they go, "Congratulations! Aren't you happy?" And I'm like, I go, "Yeah, I'd be happy if I could take this broken pencil and jab you in the face with it." You know? Because they just don't get it. I thought you understood what was going on. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm just grateful I have, like, a core group of friends that I all through this, you know, they understood what's going on. So you could talk to them about it and, you know, they would understand, you know, if a big loss comes, they realize that's a big win. It's a big gain in equity. So we haven't had a party yet, but we're going to do something the next couple of nights.
Yeah, here's another part of that. This is a sort of a, you know, correlation to that, is that we had a lot of people talking to us along the ways about strategy, and they were talking about handicapping. And handicapping had nothing to do with what we did, right? We did not handicap anything. You know, Mac tried to handicap once in a while, going, "I really feel this is going to happen. What do you guys think is going to happen?" We go, doesn't matter what we think is going to happen. We're going to play it the same way, regardless of what we think is going to happen. The only important part of this is what, where does the line go? Where does it move? How much do we bet? And a lot of people didn't grasp that.
So normally Richard and I end with a recommended section. Today, we're going to let Anthony take care of this for us, and he's going to tell us about the crown and anchor and how this all fits into Mattress Mack.
Ah, you scared me for a second. I was like, I'm not prepared. I was going to tell him about dim sum at Tim Ho Wan at the Palms, which is pretty good, a little bit more than your usual dim sum, but that's some good stuff. But okay, yeah, this is a big social part of this for us was stopping in the middle of the day and taking a break, you know, leaving the office because we did most of our work. Some people in the other media were referring to our war room, that we have a war room where we work. Well, the war room is my office, you know, and that's what we would do. And we would look at our spreadsheets. We each held this, kept a separate spreadsheet, and we both did it two different ways. I did it my way. He did it his way and Steve Heston's way. And then we would make sure they synced up. So we had a check and balance on that. And we synced up. So that was cool. But it would, you know, there'd be so much pressure and so much talking and on the phone. And all of a sudden it morphed into every afternoon, we would take a break at noon, from noon to one. And we would end up going to the Crown and Anchor, what they call the Little Crown on Spring Mountain. There's a big crown on Tropicana. But at from noon till one, both Crown and Anchors have what they call Gambler's Happy Hour. And if you play $200 in the video poker machines, bad schedules, the best schedule, 6-5 bonus poker. What's that? 96.7 or something.
It's about 97 even.
Yeah. And, but you play 200 and you get 20. So that's got an EV of about $9. And we'd go there every afternoon.
And free drinks.
And free drinks.
Not free lunch, though.
No, they used to do free lunch. They replace the free lunch with this. All right. Now, if you play and like they have got the best clam chowder in town there. So you go on a Friday or a couple of days after Friday, we play, you get a cup of soup, and often they would comp that too because they see you playing $200 or whatever. So you get beer, soup, and $20 free play.
So red or white clam chowder?
White clam chowder. That we just wrote.
This is the wrong answer. Red is better.
Well, this is a good white, though. It's a good white. It's not gloopy. It's got a lot of clams in it. So I mean, we would do that. That became our social thing. And every, you going to Crown and Anchor, going to Crown. Yep. And we'd go do it and we would talk strategy and Mac would invariably would call us in the middle of it. We'd go outside. We'd talk to him. It was fun, right, Frank?
Yep. It became a daily ritual and it broke up the day real nicely. And, we got a lot. It actually wasn't just a break. We got a lot accomplished there. Many a day we spent the majority of it just sitting there talking about what we're going to do for the rest of the afternoon and figuring things out because this thing was all encompassing. Sometimes we were up at 7 a.m. and we didn't stop till the game started. That was literally every day there was a game and a lot of the off days. I mean, it was amazing how much time it took. Last week was the lightest football betting volume for me that I can recall in at least 10 years because I just didn't have time. And so, yeah, it was a nice little reprieve every day in the afternoon for an hour.
You didn't tell it. Mac would call in the middle of this. You didn't tell him, Mac, we're in the middle of getting our $20 in free play here.
That was the great, you know, juxtaposition of the whole thing is we're carrying around. At one point, I went flying over there with a duffel bag full of $150,000 and put my foot on it while I played it because I didn't want to miss the hour hangout, right?
We all have our priorities. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.